Welcome back, episode number 44, No Cap Sports Podcast, man.
Well, let me do the number person.
No, because I already got one hooked up.
Oh, okay, my bad.
This the Brian Scalabrine episode, man.
Oh no, let me go find some. Yes,
this is gonna be a pretty bad episode.
Well, I mean, really? Who you want? Sure. Pistol Pete, Jerry West.
Yeah.
Jerry West didn't know 44.
Yes, he did.
Jerry West, say swear.
44.
Yeah,
he was born in 1944.
Jerry West wore number 44,
man. Because he was born in 1944. That's not a fact, but it sounds right.
I was about to say that's definitely not right, but he is old.
He might have been born in 1944.
Hey. Reggie Jackson or Jerry West. Okay. Okay, but I just feel like we had a lot more options before Brian Scalabrine.
Hey, Brian. Jerry West was born in 1938.
Wow. That's crazy. I really thought that you was like...
That's fun.
That is funny. That's crazy.
Hey, bro. Speaking of Jerry West, bro, R.I.P. Elgin Baylor, he just died, actually.
Yeah, bro. I saw that. R.I.P. Laker legend, bro. But, man, let's go and get this episode started, man. Josh, hit us with that five, man.
First interesting thing that I covered right before that I saw right before on segment, Kodak has recorded 167 songs since being released from prison. And that he got released when? Less than a month ago? A month ago? So just give me some thoughts, give me some feedback to what y'all think about that.
Kodak just be saying what he's thinking on the beat, bro. That's really all he does, bro. So one of them might be good, you know, anything can happen.
You said one of them?
Yeah. I feel like some of them, they definitely gonna be hit.
You said one of them. I was about to say, I think he had more than one. But what do you think, Nick?
I feel like, you know, sometimes when you're an artist, bro, you go to jail, you got all that time. You know, you get on your pad, you write some stuff out. The only thing I'm concerned is a lot of those songs might sound exactly the same. You know what I'm saying? So hopefully he got some heat in there. I mess with Kodak a long way, though. So I know he got a couple bangers in there ready for us. Because the joint dropped with Lil Yachty, that was a banger.
Yeah, it's just crazy that I had to skip Lil Yachty verse, you know, on that.
You're so sweet.
Nah, I'm wide awake, but that ain't what's keeping me awake. But regardless, you know, we got another black man at home, and I think that's a lot of songs to be in 30 days. But I mean, like you said, man, he really just talking and putting his thoughts in all that, like you said, Nick, too, just all that extra time he had up on the song. And I don't know if it's gonna be good or bad, but I think it'll just be interesting. You know, for the most part, somebody go through a traumatic experience like that. You know, we saw it with Gucci and things like, you know, coming home and people think he clones and dealing with different, you know, millennial issues. So I'm interested to see how much, like, how far this will stretch. Like, that's a whole catalog worth of music, but I'm just really interested to see how much we'll see in the album from this 167. Paulo G just came out with a freestyle mashup. He went over, it was like 3 minutes, 30 seconds long. He went over three popular beats. He did the beatbox challenge. He did No More Parties. What's the girl named? Coi Leray. And then he did Woofty. They were all like, he posted them on TikTok. So it was interesting. We haven't heard anything from Paulo G this year, I don't believe, except a single. But he's one of my favorite artists. So personally, I like what he did with the beatbox beat. I like what he did on Coi Leray's beat, but the Woofty. I guess I don't really like that song, so I didn't really like him on that beat. But what do y'all think about Paulo G? His last project was The GOAT at the end of last year.
I think it was pretty good, bro. It was a great album.
So, like, what would y'all want to see from Paulo coming up? Like, what artist would y'all want to see him collaborate with?
Lil TJ. I need a full set.
Oh.
Lil TJ?
I don't like Lil TJ. You think you could do a whole table just them two?
Yes.
I don't like Lil TJ that much.
Because you're not really from New York.
That's true. But okay. I would put him and OTF together on a whole tape before him and TJ, honestly.
OT,
like Lil Durk and all the OTF guys. And, you know.
I would think OT Jenkins, where my dad. I don't know. Yeah.
not in love with the Coco no more.
Yeah, bro.
But we got two or more Memphis guys coming out lately with some new stuff. Lil Migo, King of the Trap. Your friends on there, Nick, Frisco Trey. You know, tell me a little bit about that.
I'm gonna give it a sec. I'm not a Lil Migo fan. Haven't listened to the tape. Haven't listened to the song. Heard a snippet on Trey Instagram. That just sounded kind of hard. But I'm just not a Lil Migo guy. But I will say, the tape I've been on heavy recently is 007 tape. His latest tape, that joint was hard.
I feel that. He is kind of, you know, one of the guys bullying me in the city. But this is the first time you're not a Lil Migo fan?
No.
I did not realize that about you.
Not a Migo fan.
Crazy. My friend talking crazy group chat. Hold on, bro. Stop recording it.
No, this is still rolling.
Nah, bro. What's up with dude? Like, if you I'm finna disrespect it right
hey,
now.
Hey, I'm just going to.
Hey, that shit. Oh, that's crazy because I did want to tell him something, but now I'm in quarantine. Nobody looking at me right now. My girl still love me. Last guy for our segment, Clay Crucial. He just dropped the album, If We Must Die. One of his lead single is actually Key Signs to Atlantic, and it's like the official song for the Toronto Raptors. Something crazy like that.
So now we've got to see, you know, a full slate of March Madness games. So let's talk about it. First off, I want to talk, you know, what has been the biggest surprise of March Madness so far?
Definitely Oral Roberts, if you had to, you know, put a name on it for a variety of reasons. But, I mean, they had the nation's leading scorer coming in, but in the 15 seed, you automatically just going to throw them in the L column. So for them to make the last 15 seed to go this far was Florida Gulf Coast.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it'll be interesting. I knew that the tournament was going to be thrown off because of COVID, but I mean, I don't think anybody saw all this happening, really.
Yeah, and I mean, like, to your point, you know, Oral Roberts is only the second 15 seed. You know, Florida Gulf Coast did it first. They're the second 15 seed to ever, you know, win two games in March Madness. And, you know, they're led by, you know, a veteran team, at Abrams in the backcourt and O'Bonner in the frontcourt. And this is a team, like Dickie V said earlier on ESPN, you know, this is a veteran-led team. And we're seeing this year in March Madness, a lot of veteran-led teams are having a lot of success. So what about you, Vance? Like, what's the biggest surprise in March Madness so far to you?
I mean, bro, there's no doubt it's Oral Roberts. Like, when I was looking at the tournament, I didn't look in-depth in them at all, bro. So I'm thinking, okay, they got 10 losses, bro. They not about to do it. Like, if you got 10 losses and you a mid-major, bro, it's like, no. And to win two games, convincingly, like, they look like the better team in both games. They didn't look like left or anything. Mm-hmm. It's Oral Roberts, bro. They looking good, too.
Yeah. I mean, look, Oral Roberts is really coming out hooping, bro. But I'm going to be honest with y'all, bro. I told y'all this last week. I had Illinois to win March Madness. So, for me, the biggest surprise was Loyola coming out in the round of 32 and really handing it to Illinois, bro. That not only did they win, bro, but they won convincingly. And that really surprised me because that Illinois team was a team I had a lot of faith in. And they just let me down like that, bro.
Loyola's the true, though, bro. Like, they're, like, legitimately, like, they were top 10, I believe, in KenPom, bro. If you that talented, I actually had them beat Illinois in my bracket. I was like, bro, Illinois is good, but they kind of overrated. They got two superstars. That's cool. But it's just like, as a team, the lawyer is hooping, bro. Like, I haven't seen one game, but when you look at the box score, everything just pops out, bro.
Yeah. I want to talk about the Midwest region overall. You look at the Sweet 16. They have 8-seed Loyola, 12-seed Oregon State, 11-seed at Syracuse, and 2-seed at Houston. Those are the four teams left in that Midwest region. There's a lot of chaos going on. So just what would you guys attribute to those four teams' success in making it to the Sweet 16, knocking off the 1-seed Illinois, and just, you know, it's just been an upset-filled region. So I just want to see what you guys think about that.
I don't know. The one thing that I see that pops out of all of these teams is great guard play. Other than Loyola, I mean, they have good guard play, but the other three teams have great guard play. So for Houston, you got Quentin Grimes. For Oregon State, you got Caleb Thompson. For Syracuse, what's his name? Oh, Buddy Bowen. He's been going crazy. It's like you got three superstars at the guard position, and that's what you need to go deep into the NCAA tournament.
Yeah.
Personally, I just think it really just shows the importance of the bubble. You know, you got two teams. You know, well, yeah, the bubble, because you got one team in Syracuse that consistently, this is like their third year coming in as a 10 and 11 seed, you know, at large, where people were really questioning their selection on Selection Sunday, but they continue. I saw something on Twitter. That 2-3, they continue to like mess people up in the postseason because that's not a defense you really run into. And Boeheim, he just continues to win big games with his son now. And Oregon State, they were like 10 and 12 at one point. They weren't even consideration. They had to win the Pac-12 tournament. Yeah. But, yeah, you know, postseason play, you get into these conference tournaments. You don't know what can happen. You know, guys get hot at the right time. And stuff like this happens. You know, how many guys – I mean, I knew Ethan Thompson a little bit just because I seen him on the circuit. But, like, how many guys really knew him before 2 weeks ago when Oregon State went on that run?
I didn't know.
Exactly. So, just the importance of that bubble, and you seeing that team that we debate, you know, a month out and we debate daily, oh, this team should be in, this team should be in. And you see how close it is. Because what's it tell me? DJ Jeffries can't average 17 points in the NCAA tournament game after struggling most of the season. You know, things, crazy things can happen. So it just, the importance of the bubbles will highlight that region for me.
Yeah, I wouldn't even say it's the importance of the bubble, man. First of all, when I look at this Midwest region, there's no way Loyola should have been an 8 seed. They were severely underranked, bro. Like Van said last week, top 10 in KenPom rankings, bro. This is a legitimate team, a legitimate threat in this year's tournament. Well, what I see in a lot of these teams in this Midwest region that have, you know, made it to this point, like I said earlier, a lot of veteran teams, man. You look at Loyola, a lot of 3-year, 4-year guys on that team. Same thing with Syracuse. Buddy Boeheim's on his, what, fourth year there? And the same can go for Houston. Same goes for Oregon State. These are just veteran-led teams, guys that have been in the program for a minute. You look at teams like Duke and Kentucky that aren't even in the tournament this year. This is the 1 year where I would say one-and-done talent can't get it done because it's COVID.
Ooh, it's really been superstar talent. Going off of what you're saying, just like in the – we just talked about the Midwest region. In the South region, the fourth best team, you got Oral Roberts, the leading scorer in the nation. Arkansas, SEC Player of the Year. You got Baylor, who came in first place in the in the Big 12, and you got Villanova came first place in the Big East. It's all about star power this year.
Mm-hmm. But not even star power, veteran star power. I want to make sure you put that asterisk there. Because there are star players all across college basketball. We saw Cade Cunningham last night, star power, freshman. Couldn't get the job done against a veteran Oregon State team. And I think that's what's separating a lot of these teams, not just in the Midwest region, but in every region of this NCAA tournament.
So, that's the demon you thought, bro.
Hey,
how you
doing? Yeah. Everything is going to keep happening.
And so, you know, continuing to talk about March Madness, I want to hear y'all's predictions for the Final Four now that we've seen, you know, two rounds of games.
That East region is all types of messed up. I know me and you picked LSU to beat Michigan, so I can't really pick them to go to the Final Four. So I'll go Alabama out of that region just because – they can shoot the ball so well. They're most talented team in that bracket, I'd say. And Illinois region, as much as it pains me, I guess I got to go Houston. I mean, I feel like not that they're the best team in that bracket, but they'll have the easiest path. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they play Syracuse today, I think. And they play the winner of Loyola and who else?
Oregon State.
I'm saying, Loyola could potentially beat Houston, but I don't think they have a Quentin Grimes level guard. I know they got Cutrich, Baby Jokic, whatever, but I don't think they have a guy on the perimeter that can stay with Grimes for 40 minutes. Let me get Baylor for the South region. Arkansas, I mean, they look good in the SEC tournament, but Oral Roberts might beat them, honestly. So,
yeah. So now, Vance, I want to hear, what are your Final Four predictions?
Ooh, Final Four. All right, so I'm going to go with the brackets that have already been filled out for the Sweet 16. So after Midwest, bro, I don't like Houston. And I don't think it's a secret why, bro. They don't beat Memphis 3 straight times. Yeah. So I'm going to go with the Warriors Chicago out of the Midwest. I think they'll beat Oregon State. It's just their team. They have a team, a squad, bro. So I'm going to go with Warriors Chicago, bro. I got Syracuse. The Warriors Chicago beating Syracuse out of the Midwest. At the South, I have I'm gonna take Arkansas. I don't know, just out of them 14, I like Oral Roberts. They play good, but Arkansas, they was not sleeping to make it anyways. So I'm gonna take Arkansas. Out the East, as we're recording, the bracket hasn't been filled out, but I'm going to take Oregon. You know, shout out to the Lawson Bros, bro. Let's go with Oregon. Out the West, I'm going to go with Gonzaga. That's the easiest one to pick to me, Gonzaga.
Yeah, so I'm going to bounce off of that. Of course, in the West, I'm going to go Gonzaga. That's the easy one. You know, once he had a team undefeated on the year, I think they're going to keep that streak up. But I will say, in the Elite Eight, they will face a tough test against that USC team with all of that size and talent that they possess. And so going –
That's Gonzaga and USC?
Yeah.
Ooh, that's a good one. That's a good one.
Assuming USC beats Oregon in the Sweet 16. But
yeah.
Continuing on to the East, I got LSU coming out of that region. I really like the way they play basketball. Yes. A lot of talented players on that team. And I think they will – Like I said last week, I think they upset Michigan, and I think they're going to carry that momentum all the way to the Final Four. And so moving on, in the South region, I got Baylor winning. I just, yet again, veteran guard play. Guards and veteran leadership is what, you know, dictates a team's success, especially in this year's tournament. So I'm going to rock out with Baylor. And out the Midwest, I just got to go with Loyola. That's just, you know, a top 10 KenPom team. I think they'll have it pretty easy with Oregon State and match up with Syracuse in the Elite Eight, and I think they'll be able to break down Syracuse. So that's my Final Four right there.
Hey, real quick, do you have pulled up your Final Four predictions from last week before the tournament started? Do you have that pulled up?
Yeah, I got mine right here.
All right, who won it?
So last week, my Final Four was Gonzaga, Alabama, Ohio State, and Illinois.
Oh, you sick.
That's very sick. Very sick.
I had Gonzaga, Alabama, Baylor. Those three are still alive, but I had Oklahoma State beating Loyola in Chicago. So Oklahoma State, I'm 3 out of 4 for right now, but I had switched it up dramatically.
Yeah, me too.
I had
man.
Gonzaga, Alabama, Baylor, and I can't remember if I had that last week. I'm 3 for 4.
Yeah. So as you can all see here at No Cap Sports, we are losers. We can't make perfect brackets. We tried. But we failed miserably.
75% is a C somewhere.
Moving on, we got to talk about the Los Angeles Lakers. Saturday night, LeBron goes down with a high ankle sprain. He's out indefinitely, but as we all know, being athletes, a high ankle sprain is something that's really a week-to-week injury. Now, that compounds on to the Lakers being without Anthony Davis, who's out with a calf injury, and he's been out since February 14th, and he's still looking at another 3-plus weeks on the IR. So, Sunday, the Lakers played the Suns, routed 111-94. Shout out to CP3. He moved up to number 6 in terms of all times assist in that game.
10,000.
Exactly. And so now I want to talk to y'all about just how will this stretch without LeBron and AD affect the Lakers?
It's cool time, baby. It's going to look like a lot about 2018 Los Angeles Lakers. Yeah. With Ryan Kelly and Robert Zachary and all them boys out there. Being realistic, they got a much better cast than those Lakers. They still got Montrez, they still got Schroeder. Anthony Davis has been out, 2 to 3 weeks at this point? With two to three weeks left?
He's been out since February 14th. So.
Okay, so a month. So, I mean, both of those guys are looking at missing in about 10-plus games. So – they're about halfway, a little past the All-Star break. So, I mean, I don't know how much LA is going to be jockeying for position technically in the playoff races because they got the two best guys. Like, it is what it is. But it will be interesting to see what they do over the next 10 to 12 games. If they can, like, play 500, I think that they'll set themselves up to be the one seed, honestly. Because I think Utah still is right now.
Yeah. So, right now, the Lakers are currently the third seed in the West. But they only have a 1.5 game cushion on the Clippers and a 2.5 game cushion on Portland. The Western playoff race is very tight this year.
Okay, give them 6-6 over the next 12 games. And then, you know, LeBron and AD, you know, to get a little ramp to get back acclimated and get ready for postseason. I mean, I can see them, you know, turning into a good one. See, I think because I'm not a Utah believer. So I just think that all they got to do right now is stay afloat.
You think they're going to beat New Orleans at New Orleans? Depends.
No.
You think they'll beat Philly?
No.
All right. Here go a 2-game win streak right here to even that out. Cleveland and Orlando. They'll split that at the very least.
Yeah.
I think they'll split that, Cleveland and Orlando. The Bucks, I'll chalk it up as an L, bro. So that we'll just say they're 1-4. Sacramento, the Kings, maybe. What y'all think? The Kings?
I'm taking the Kings.
The Clippers, the Raptors, the Heat, the Knicks. Dang, hey, this schedule kind of hard, bro.
That's what I'm saying. This is this is gonna be a tough stretch for the Lakers, bro. Hey, so Vance, as a Lakers fan, are you concerned?
No, it really doesn't matter, bro. Bro, it's like it's still not gonna be full capacity fans, so they still just gonna be out there hooping. So it's just them. Look, when they're healthy 2 months from now, that's when they gotta be healthy. They're both LeBron and Anthony Davis will be healthy by what's today, March 22nd. By May 22nd, they will be healthy, and that's all that matters. You're gonna be the two best players with Schroeder. Just gotta get rid of Wesley Matthews, and they're gonna be straight, bro.
But my thing is, bro, you're playing in the tough Western Conference. You see these guys, you know, potentially having the Lakers slide down to the bottom half of the conference. I can see them, you know, losing home court advantage. And that's, you know, even though there are no fans, that's still a plus to having home court in the playoffs. And so looking at this Lakers team, when both LeBron and AD are on the court, this team is plus 14.6 in terms of net efficiency. But when both of them are off the court, the team has played 463 minutes with both of them off the court. The team is negative 4.2 in terms of net efficiency. I think this stretch without LA's two biggest stars could potentially get scary for this team and see them take a dramatic slide down the Western Conference playoff ladder.
You a hater, though. That's the thing. Like, what do you think, Josh? Nick Bean don't count. It's too biased, bro. He gave facts, but it's still too biased, bro. I don't like it.
But I'm just Vance, be honest. Who's the best player on the team right now?
The Lakers?
Yes, without LeBron and AD.
Taylor Horton Tucker, but technically Dennis Schroeder. But I'm being serious. Y'all think I'm playing.
Dude got some wide shoulders. That's all I got to say about him.
He is like Bucky, bro. But I'm going to go with Dennis Schroeder. I think you can depend on him to get you 25 a game here and there, every other game. Some games he'll give you 30, some games he'll give you 17. It's like, you know, it's whatever. But it varies a lot.
That's what I'm saying. They're still throwing out what they got. Schroeder, Wes Matthews, or Caldwell Pope.
I'm saying Wes Matthews, bro. Please.
Okay. So they're throwing out a decent starting. I think Kuzma, people forget he was never a one in it, truly, but he ran that Lakers offense, I guess. Whatever they wanted to call it, while the little passes that LeBron wasn't there, that D'Angelo Russell era. I mean, I forgot about that, really. But, I mean, he was a 20-point-per-night guy. So I just feel like it's only 12 games. They just tell him, you know, well, this is what he wants to do anyways, because there's a lot of people are surprised that he's still in L.A. Just go out there, shoot, you know, get your little 20 points a game. You know, Schroeder and Montrez are going to handle their defensive responsibilities. And they can come out five games out of 12.
So I want to ask y'all something. The NBA trade deadline is March 25th, 3 p.m. Should the Lakers be active at the trade deadline? And if so, for who?
For who? They need to get Wesley Matthews out of the rotation. Anyway, some way, somehow, somewhere. Please. I mean, bro, for cash considerations, bro. Like, literally, the team is fine. I think the team is fine. You know, you go for free agency. You only got to trade for it. But they do need a big, like a rim protector. Last season, until the playoffs hit, when everybody went small ball on the bubble, bro, JaVale McGee and Dwight Howard were pretty important to their success in the regular season last year. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, getting the big, they might be able to do that in free agency. Or they might be able to, you know, trade, but I don't want to get rid of anybody with value. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to have to get rid of an Alex Caruso just to get a bid.
Yeah, and I mean, I feel that, you know, the trade deadline is March 25th, but after the trade deadline, you know, the buyout market gets going. Guys who can't get traded get bought out. And I think a guy that LA should be looking pretty heavily at is Andre Drummond. You know, Cleveland's been sending him out of games with hopes to trade him, haven't gotten a deal done yet. And that deadline is approaching. So, assuming, you know, Drummond gets bought out, LA should be the first ones to pick up the phone and hit him up. But to me, I think that LA still needs to make a move on another ball handler. Not necessarily a point guard, but another wing player that can handle ball handling responsibilities. Because you look at this Lakers team right now without LeBron, they're down to only Dennis Schroeder and Alex Caruso as ball handlers on that team. And Schroeder is, you know, a guy who was up for sixth man of the year last year. But Caruso isn't a guy who really gets you excited in terms of ball handling and, you know, running the offense. So I think the Lakers should be looking to acquire, like, a veteran talent. For example, maybe bringing back Isaiah Thomas, bringing him on the roster, provide a scoring punch off the bench, you know, a solid guard, or making a move for a veteran like George Hill. I think any one of those moves, you know, would bolster that Lakers team. And then those are guys that would still complement them when LeBron and AD get back.
True or false, is are the Lakers in trouble of not making the finals, not making it to the finals?
True. No, listen to me, bro. If they fall into a 7 or 8 seed in the West and you got to play Utah or Phoenix in the first round, that is skip. The West is tight. I wouldn't say at most they have a 5-game lead over that current 8 seed. They could easily fall into that bottom half and have to see a team like Phoenix.
How many games? Utah,
Portland in the first round.
They'll beat Phoenix and Portland, bro. Like, come on.
But I'm saying it's a potential, bro. There's potential for a loss. The path to the finals is harder when you get to the bottom, on the bottom half of the Western Conference.
So who's Western Conference better than Lakers right now?
Currently, looking at the standings right now, Utah and
– Right now in front of them is Utah and Phoenix.
Yeah, Utah and Phoenix are in front of them right now.
Do you think that – in full strength, either one of those teams can even take them to 6 games.
Yes.
In the finals. Which one?
I think both of them can.
Shut up, bro. Phoenix is nice, but it's about to be just like the Kobe years. Like, LeBron is going to put them down slowly, and it's going to be whatever.
But I still think those are 7-game series. LeBron's getting up in age. The path to the finals is going to be harder if they slip into the bottom half of the Western Conference. You can look like that all you want, but now the Lakers are going to go from playing teams like, I don't know, Sacramento in the first round to playing real hard, meaningful games such as the Suns if they slip.
You know how Stephen A. hate on the Cowboys? That's how you hate on the Lakers, bro. Because you were doing the exact same stuff last year.
Now talking about NBA rookies, we've seen, you know, over half a season of them right now. So we all got 2 rookies and we're going to grade them, you know, give them a report card essentially after seeing half of the season, you know, essentially give them a midterm. So Josh, go and get us started with your rookies, man.
Thank you, Nick. The 2 rookies I got that I was signed / chose, I got Big James Wiseman and Emmanuel Quickly. I mean, it's an interesting contrast because – I mean, their points per game and their contributions to the teams have been honestly about similar, but just the expectations and the viewing of it is a little different, and the situations and the circumstances for each team is a little different. So I'll talk about Big James first. Let me just read off some of these numbers to give you what we're working with. 11 points a game, 3.5 fouls a game, 6 total rebounds, 61% from the free throw line, 36% from 3. I know there's a little odd assortment of stats, but it kind of gives the most telling points of his games. We're kind of dealing with the same thing with Jaren right now. Memphis, big guys are going to foul a lot. He played, 5 games in Memphis. And that's just the thing that big guys got to get out of the system, jumping at pump fakes, you know, being able to guard guards on the perimeter without fouling. So that's one of the biggest weaknesses in his games, but that's more something that can be fixed with just time, maturity. So one encouraging thing that he is shooting almost over 36% from 3. That was kind of one of his biggest swing characteristics coming out. And if he can shoot like that, man, he's a problem. That's legitimately a problem from that range, and that creates different mismatches, and that increases his value by a lot. So Steve Kerr doesn't really play a lot of – doesn't give rookies a lot of minutes. Personally, I feel like that's kind of kind of backwards when you have somebody drafted that high, but he does have Steph Curry on his team, so I understand kind of sort of what he's doing. But yeah, James, I gotta give him a B. He looks good, and it's not really his fault at all. But LaMelo Ball has run away with the number. It has looked like he has run away with the number one overall, the rookie of the year, and he looked like the number one overall pick. So he looks really good. He looks like, you know, he justifies the selection. But with the way LaMelo's been playing, I feel like he has to be all-star level next year, just so those front office guys really don't feel like they made a bad decision. Cause I mean, to be honest, I don't know which way I got LaMelo, but that dude's an all-star next year. So I mean, kind of like the same thing with the Luka and Trae Young type of dimension. But yeah, I think James, he's doing okay right now, but I just want to see him just take that next step, get his feel for the game a little better, and block a few more shots and get a few more rebounds. But Emmanuel quickly, you know, he was a sophomore last year for Kentucky, played with Cal. Honestly, he's not really a guy that popped for me out of high school or in college. But he's on the Knicks right now. They got a young team. They got some excitement. They just got a lot. They got a lot of pieces. I don't know what it exactly looks like in the playoffs, but they got a lot of young guys that can hoop. Randall, Barrett. And now quickly, let me throw out some of the key stats. 12.7 points a game, 2.5 assists, 39% overall field goals, but 38% from three. So, yeah, Cal has been, obviously we know this year, has been kind of slacking in terms of on-court production, on-court results, but he hasn't, you know, lacked recruiting. And, you know, quickly not no different. Four-star guy coming out of Maryland. And, let me ask y'all, had y'all seen him at Kentucky like that at all?
I don't think they were good that year or something like that. So I don't think, or maybe they were, but they never had an SEC tournament, so I didn't really know.
Yeah, I remember he was the lead guard on that team, and I want to say he had a couple of big moments regular season play. I want to say he's the buzzer beater one game. I can't remember what game it was, but I remember he was the lead guard on that Kentucky team.
Yeah, I think my recollection is about the same as yours, Nick. But just again, like he's not off the wall athletic. He's not gonna really just shake you with your handle. And those are two things that I immediately noticed about him when he got to Kentucky. So I mean, honestly, I can say I kind of wrote him off. But he's got in the league. He's tossed up over 75 floaters this year, and that's really his only offense inside the paint. So I said the 39% field goal percentage because I want to see him try to finish a little better around the rim, because if you're one of those guys that can't really get to the paint but can't really convert, your value goes down a little bit. You become a high-end backup point guard. But, yeah, Quigley has – I mean – as a late first rounder, you know, to be in the running for rookie of the year, that's pretty impressive. And I think that he can turn himself into a Monte Morris type of guy, you know, efficient 3-point shooter, high assist, low turnover guy. And his floater is interesting because he gets it off from different angles. He shot some from like one step within the 3-point line. He said he looks up to Lou Will in some of his games. Because he's, like Nick said, he was a lead guard at Kentucky, but they've been playing him off the ball in New York just because he showed he can shoot. If he can just improve his inside the arc game a little bit more, I think that you got a starting point guard.
You think he's the best guard on the Knicks right now?
Is RJ Barrett a guard?
Yeah.
I mean, I would hate to say that. But no, he just had like a 30-point game. I think RJ Barrett still is way higher than he is still. They would call him a guard.
Okay.
But I mean, I think like the guy that does the most traditional guard things on that team, he probably is. Like, because Randall is gonna be. I mean, he's got some assists here, but Barrett, Randall, Mitchell Robinson, none of those guys are gonna be guys that can facilitate offense. So I mean, it's been mostly quickly.
For my rookies, I'm gonna start out with my first rookie, LaMelo Ball, man. Number 3 overall draft pick. You know, he had a lot of questions coming in. People questioning his shot selection, you know, his family, all of those things. But he answered those questions by putting up a Rookie of the Year campaign. He's averaging 15.9 points, 5.9 rebounds, 6.1 assists, shooting 45% from the field, man. And even though he didn't start the first 20 games of the season, because Borrego had a lot of veteran guard options on that team, you think about Devontae Graham and Terry Rozier, LaMelo Ball started the last 21 games for the Hornets and, you know, really showed improvement in each of those games. Now, even though he's out for the season with a fractured wrist, I think he made a very solid Rookie of the Year campaign. He showed improvement as a shooter, a lot of highlights all over ESPN and things like that. And I think he's really, you know, helped to keep the Hornets in the playoff race. They're currently an 8 seed, and his play is a major factor in that. You know, he's the one really facilitating the offense, hitting the tough shots, just getting things going with the Hornets and their pick-and-roll offense. And so, you know, for this season so far, I give him an A. He definitely showed up and showed out. And my second rookie, Isaac Okoro, a guy out of Auburn, he didn't have a whole lot of hype coming out of college. Because, you know, he's more of a defensive specialist, and that's kind of what his role has become in the NBA. He's a guy that only averages 8 points, 2 rebounds, 1 assist a game. And, you know, he's a 41% shooter from the field. But his defense is a major help to that Cavs team, especially in the backcourt that features Colin Sexton and Darius Garland, the two worst defenders in the NBA last season. So looking at, you know, what Okoro – yes. So looking at what Okoro has done, bro, of course when you're a defensive specialist, you have some ups and you have some downs. LeBron put 46 on him and the Lakers win. But on the flip side, he held James Harden to 4 points on one of two shooting in the fourth quarter of a Cavs win. So, you know, he's getting the job done on the defensive end. And you can look at that and you can see it in his win shares. He's got 0.6 win shares on the season, defensive win shares. And, you know, he's shown flashes as an effective cutter and finisher around the rim, but shooting isn't really his game. He doesn't have to be an offensive player when you're surrounded by guys like Colin Sexton, Darius Garland, Larry Nance, you know, those caliber guys. So I think he's doing well and filling his role. And, you know, he started all the games for the Cavs. He leads all rookies in minutes per game, playing 32.5 minutes per game. So I think he's getting the job done. I just like to see him become a better shooter and more of an offensive threat so he doesn't fall into that Andre Roberson, you know, that kind of category right there. So, so far in the season, I give him a B-minus grade.
Didn't he dunk on Tatum too? Oh, yeah, I imagine.
He might have. Celtics kind of boo-boo this year.
You know, who did dunk on somebody this year?
Anthony Edwards.
My rookie, Anthony Edwards. Let me get it, man. Hey, you know, averaging a rookie high 16.7 points per game with 4 rebounds, 2 assists, and a steal average to go along in that game. And my guy, he's recently been put in. He just got put into the starting lineup just 10 games ago. So I'm about to read out his points per game over the last 10 games with the points he added. So when he first started his first game 10 games ago, 21 points. 21 points, 24 points, 19 points, 27 points, 21 points, 34 points, 29 points, 42 points, and he just had 11 points, but he had 10 rebounds and 6 assists to go along with it, bro. He doesn't even like to play basketball. He just does it because he's good at it. He claims he's good at everything he do, and I believe him. And so my second rookie, I'm going to go with Tyrese Haliburton, you know, the guard out of Iowa State. I like what he's been doing. You know, he's not even – I don't even think he's starting there right now. They still got De'Aaron Fox and Buddy Hield. But he's had he's averaging 12.4 points per game, 5 assists, 3 rebounds with a 5-to-1 assist-to-turnover ratio. Jeez. Currently, he has a PER of 16.61. And, you know, I just like the way he's a smooth guard. Like, I remember Josh gave a report on him on before draft day. He said his jump shot ugly, but at least he go in. Because he's shooting 41% from 3-point range. So, yeah, I like what I see from him also. He could be a guard of the feature. He could be an off guard or he could be the point guard running the show. And then just real quick, you know, shout out to Desmond Bane, you know, rookie for the Grizzlies, keeping them afloat, playing 500. You know, Jaren Jackson Jr. is coming back soon.
Yeah.
I just want to say, add on, like you said, Vance, after LaMelo, the rookie I would take is Haliburton. And I really like to come out of Iowa State, you know, long 6'5", 6'6", play defense, shooting 40% this year. And he's going to take one of them jobs. I don't think it'll be De'Aaron Fox. It'll probably be Buddy Hield. I don't know how well they'll be able to shoot together alongside each other. Neither one of them is – I don't know. Haliburton is a plus shooter. It's shooting like a plus shooter, but it just doesn't look good. Right. It looks like he hurts himself when he shoots, but it's still going in. But no, I think like Haliburton, he does a lot of the things that LaMelo does at like 85% as well. He's not just the rebounder that he is, but I think those guys can go neck and get neck to neck for the next 5 to 10 years if they can stay healthy.
So of course we're gonna close this episode out with another segment of Game Balls. I'm gonna go first, and I gotta give my game ball to Buddy Boeheim. He's made 13 threes in his first 2 tournament games, bro. That's a team record. Adding on to that, 55 total points in Syracuse's first 2 games. That's 3rd most in team history, bro. And so far, he's led Syracuse to the Sweet 16 through 2 tournament games. He's averaging 27.5 points, 3.5 rebounds, and he's shooting 58% from 3, bro. He's doing a lot to make his dad proud, and hopefully they keep dancing, man. So I got to give Buddy Boeheim my other game ball.
Main plan for his daddy approval.
Wow, that's crazy. But, yeah, I'm going to give my game ball to North Texas, to Javion Hembly. You know, a Memphis guy, attended Ridgeway High School. No D1 offers out of high school, so he went to Milo. And he was committed to Buffalo, but then he got a late UNT offer. Smooth game, lefty, you know. You know how we do it where we from. So yeah, he beat who did he beat? It was the four seed that he beat. I can't remember. But he looked excellent all
Purdue. They beat Purdue.
Thank you. I would say some nondescript team. His dad is doing the whole black graduation thing with the iPad and in the stands, you know. It was a good, and they had their AD is has a Memphis connection, something like that. But regardless, you know, that's the type of game that puts somebody into NBA consideration. You know, 24, 11, 5, showing that you can, you know, get to the anywhere on the court you can at any point. They got beat by Villanova pretty bad that I saw, but regardless, you know, showing like that on the national stage, especially for a guy that didn't come in with just a whole bunch of recognition and kind of your fight for his spot. You know, it was good to see him get his moment. So, Javion Hamlin for my game ball.
Ooh, I like that, bro. For my game ball, I'm going to have to give it to Cameron Crutwig, you know, the big man out of Loyola Chicago. Right now, he has been through all these conference champions, ran through Georgia Tech, ACC champion Georgia Tech, just ran through Big Ten champion Illinois, both by double digits. And guess what? They about to do it again, the Oregon State. So, let's get right with Loyola Chicago. So, Cameron Curry, he like his nickname Tater, bro. Like, don't wrong with him. But you know,
Nacho Libre, like, it's crazy, man, for real.
Man, but yeah, I'm gonna have to give it a Curry and a little shout out to you know what? Fun fact, bro. Billie Jean was made about Sister Jean. RIP MJ, bro.
Hey, my man, you good?
All right, and so thanks for tuning in to another episode, No Cap Sports, man. Make sure y'all like, comment, subscribe, and please, please don't listen to us when we talk about March Madness. Don't put any bets on what we said, because we are not liable for you losing your money. And so with that, bro, we out of here.